Nation. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Texas is the first kicker. The kicker comes through.
We're back.
We are back indeed with another episode of the Fire Tom Herman podcast, your overreactionary Texas Longhorns football fan podcast. My name is Josh. I am back from the dead, and I'm joined by my stalwart co-host Noah, who is not lazy like me and doesn't just take episodes off. But it's been a while, man. How you doing? What's up?
Not a whole lot. It's kind of just been business for usual for me. I'm writing my thesis from my master's right now, but I really doubt that anybody wants to hear about it. So,
you're right. That does sound pretty boring, and does sound like you're probably pretty busy with that. But so I guess to get you back to that, let's just dive straight into this Oklahoma State game. What do you say?
Yeah, let's do it.
So I mean, first thought for me would be, it's just nice to be done with this sort of streak that Oklahoma State had going against us. I mean, you had five straight home games that we'd lost. You had four straight in just the series overall against Oklahoma State. So it's really just good to get that monkey off our backs, sort of move past the ridiculousness that was the end of the last Oklahoma State game between Breckenhager and the Tom Herman stuff and the fight that wasn't really a fight or whatever. I'm just glad to be done with that.
Yeah, I am too. Each year we're just slowly taking back the Big 12. You know, last year was beating TCU. This year it's Oklahoma State. So yeah, slowly we're climbing our way back to just being the king. Well, you know, co-king.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think Tom Herman brought up in his post-game press conference that I think is indicative of us sort of making that climb back is throughout his tenure at Texas, it's been this sort of message that we will lose the game if we do not play our best. And for the first couple of years, that was absolutely true. If we weren't going 100%, we were going to lose the game. If we started getting sloppy, if things started going wrong, we needed to play clean and we needed to be focused for the entire game to be able to win the game. This was the first game that I felt like that we won where we were clearly not crisp. We were not only was it sort of like, it wasn't like a slugfest where it was two defenses sort of imposing their will on each other, but we just didn't play well in several key areas and on key plays and lost focus there and did not really sort of show up with our A game for the entire game, and we're still able to pull out the W. So he talked about how those elite teams can win against still solid opponents when they are only playing their B team or their C game or whatever. They're not fully focused and they can still win the game. That was sort of the situation we found ourselves in, I think, with the Oklahoma State game.
Right. And the thing that I like they added in there was like the elite teams beat solid teams, right? Because I actually think this Oklahoma State is a really solid team. I don't think it's going to end up like USC or TCU last year, which looked like good wins, and then both teams were pretty bad. I think Oklahoma State is a legitimately good team. I don't know that they're like great. I don't think they're going to compete for the conference, but I think they're kind of like a fringe top 30, 35 team. And I mean, they were a little bit sloppy too, but I definitely think that I think the sloppiness kind of favored them and we still won, basically. So yeah, it's nice to just win games.
Yeah. And what you said with them being a solid team, this is definitely a team that I'm glad we got done with really basically the first game of the Big 12 schedule for us. This is a team where you'd watch them, I feel like, throughout the season, and you'd catch them five games into the conference schedule and go, oh shit, they're sort of rolling. They've got the ability to jump out and get us. And when you're at this point where you've sort of built into, all right, we just got to win these next few games and we can get to the conference title game, they're good enough to be that sort of bug that's just bothering everybody. So it's good to get that out of the way, that headache out of the way, and now it's basically, we're able to focus on the next opponents, who outside of OU, I don't think we're going to find a team that's going to match up worse for us, especially on defense, than Oklahoma State would. So to get them out of the way and done with, it's good to be able to move on from them. But I guess let's start off with the bad things that we had, talking about all the sloppiness. And I think the primary area where we were sloppy was definitely on special teams.
Yeah, there's no way to get around losing two muffed punts, right? And one of them was just a drop by a freshman, and the other was a really bad decision by a senior. So it wasn't just like a one-off mistake. I mean, they both were like rare mistakes. Like, I don't think we're gonna have another muffed punt this season, but losing two in one game is pretty horrendous.
Yeah, and we almost lost the third when we had that sort of the killed punt, basically the first one that Brandon Jones was in for. He was trying to call off and kill the return, and the ball hit the ground and bounced straight into one of our guys, and thankfully we recovered that one. But it was a messy night all around, I think, for the punt return team. And even the punt team on our side, I thought Ryan Bouchefsky, as far as being able to be accurate with his punts, had probably his best game as a Texas Longhorn. But for whatever reason, the Gunners were not on the same page as him and were not turning back to look for the ball, weren't looking up for the ball, didn't know exactly where they were going. And we wasted a couple. We had one that like bounced at like the 2-yard line and ended up shooting all the way back out to the 17 because no one was there to actually field it. We had another one hit inside the 5 that bounced into the end zone because no one was paying attention to where the ball was. So there's a lot of things that need to be cleaned up on special teams, but it gives me a lot of hope, at least for Ryan Bouchefsky, that he could take that next step and be that level of deadly accurate that his cousin was in his third year at Texas.
Yeah, I agree with all the stuff about the coverage. The coverage was pretty poor, but definitely Bouchefsky had a nice game. You know, I think Dixon is the GOAT, so I don't know that he'll ever get there, but if you can have a guy that's consistently having the punts hit inside the 10, at the 10, that's huge. That's a big deal.
The next thing, I think, for bad things that sort of jumped off the page for Texas fans would be in the first half, we were up, I think by this point it was 2 touchdowns, or maybe it was like 13 points or something like that, but we're 4th and 3. We're somewhere between our own 40 and 45-yard line, and we choose to go for it. And a lot of Texas fans are not happy about this because we showed last week that Cameron Dicker has the leg to hit that kind of field goal. What did you think? Did you think we should have gone for it? Do we think we should have attempted what was a long field goal? Because, I mean, just because he can make 57-yard field goals doesn't mean he will always make 57-yard field goals.
Right. And even beyond whether he will or won't, I mean, 7 points is more than 3. So I liked the decision to go for it fine. I didn't have an issue with that. The play call was really... I mean, the call isn't bad, but running the actual play was bad, right? Like, it's one of those things where as soon as you get in the line, you see 9 guys in the box, you punt the call and you get something else in, you know, whether that's on Herman or Sam. Herman took all the blame for it in the post-game press conference. But, yeah, that was just a really disappointing and kind of a larger issue that we've had on third and fourth down this year. So it's something that they need to sort that out over the bye week so that doesn't spill over. Because teams are learning.
Yeah, sort of... short yardage situations, we haven't been as good as we were last year, where we felt like we could get to 2-3 yards to the first down, and we felt like we could just sort of power our way for those final few yards to get the first down.
Right. And well, teams are learning, like whenever Sam has a 70%+ conversion rate on 3rd and 5 or less as a runner, teams are going to learn, well, don't let them do the thing that's converting 3/4 of the time. So they're putting 9 in the box, they're overloading it so that no matter... Like, in order for that play to have worked by Sam, it probably would have required exceptional blocking and exceptional running, right? And if you're requiring both of those things to be great, then that's an issue with the call. So I think the offense is still figuring themselves out. They lost. Like, without Colin Johnson, then there's kind of an issue of, like, what is our new go-to on 3rd and 4th and short? You know, because last year, like, Colin Johnson on slants, Lil Jordan Humphrey on outs, QB run game. Andrew Beck was an underrated part of our third down last year, being able to hit him. Brewer hasn't stepped up into that. Duvernay's been good. So far this year, it's just been Duvernay and QB runs, but we need to add something else to that. So that's what I'm hoping that the coaches will really take a look at over the bye week.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing us sort of take that sort of QB power, that power package that we have, and build that run-pass option with Devin Duvernay doing his bubble screen thing into that short yardage package, so we can hand the ball off. But if we see them do like Oklahoma State did, where they stacked 9 and those guys were going at the first motion, they weren't waiting at all to see if Keontae Ingram or Sam actually had the ball. They were just full bore going straight for the ball. You zip that out to Devin Duvernay, he sheds 1 tackle like he seems like he does every single time he touches the ball. And you're talking about not just picking up the first down, but possibly more just with his athleticism. So I'd like to see that wrinkle get added in. And it's possible that wrinkle is part of that package, and it's just something that's sort of being held back for a certain game in October here.
Yeah. Well, I'll talk more about some of that holding back later on whenever we get to the good stuff. But yeah, they'll need to add something to it. But then I think that the biggest negative takeaway from the game has to be the injuries, right? We're hurting on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, we were hurting before the game even started with DeMarvion Overshown and B.J. Foster being out. Hopefully they'll be back before West Virginia. But that's two of our safeties going out, which isn't the worst thing with the depth that we have at safety. But then you add in all the injuries from this game. You've got Caden Stearns, Jalen Green, Josh Thompson, Marcus Tillman. All of those guys are missing at least 4 weeks. Josh Thompson could miss the rest of the season. Marcus Tillman is already definitely out for the rest of the season. So this one hit us hard. I'm not sure what exactly the primary cause of that was, if there was something that Oklahoma State was doing, though I never got the impression that there was any sort of dirty play going on there, or what it was about those guys having that issue. Hell, maybe the AC in the home locker room was turned off.
Yeah. I honestly, part of it might just end up being a symptom of physical play, because Jalen Green and Caden Stearns both injured themselves on plays where they were making hits, right? Like Jalen Green came up and hit a guy on a crossing route and dislocated his shoulder in the process. Stearns, there wasn't really a good angle of his injury, but it was the same thing where he was trying to go up for a ball and came down, like, you know, contesting a catch with the receiver. So that's a little bit of a cop-out. Like, it's possible to play physical and not injure yourself, but it does kind of lead to an increased risk. And it just happens that 2 years in a row, our safety room has gotten, like, decimated by injuries. But luckily we have the bye, and I think Foster and Overshown will come back. And if those two guys come back, we'll be fine at safety. Fine might not be good enough to beat OU, but we'll be okay.
Right. But I think everyone at this point is sort of expecting that's just going to turn into a big track meet anyway. But we'll really find out over these next 2 weeks, now that OU is getting into semi-serious opponents. We'll see how that new defense is actually holding up.
And how Hurts holds up.
Yeah, and how Hurts holds up when he starts facing some actual defenses. Not that Texas Tech is going to put up a whole lot of resistance this week, but, you know. One of the other areas, I think this also spins off of that same discussion that we were having about the power run game. Something we're not doing well is those drives that we had last year, that seemed like we were pretty good at just running the clock, killing the clock, just bleeding out the end of the game. We sort of reverted to the same problem that we had against OU in the fourth quarter last year, where we needed to put together one drive, one long drive to just bleed a ton of time off the clock and even just get 3 points up on the board to sort of put a nail in it. And we had back-to-back three and outs, likely due to just sort of us not being nearly as aggressive as we were, just doing simple halfback runs. That's something that's going to need to get fixed up, because we are past that point, even with the Kansases of the world still left on our conference schedule. We're going to need to be able to put teams away in the fourth quarter and not run the risk of them creeping back into the game like we saw Oklahoma State nearly do on Saturday.
Yep, definitely. We'll need to be able to slam the coffin and then nail it shut. But yeah, you want to go and talk about what looked good?
Yeah, I think as far as the good things that are looking good, I think we can definitively say at this point that Keontae Ingram has bounced back from whatever mental funk he got into during the LSU game after dropping the easy touchdown pass, because this was, without a doubt, his best game in Burnt Orange.
Yeah, I'd agree. I've seen some people are like, well, it's definitely his best game of the season, maybe his career. I think it's like pretty, I agree with you, it's pretty clearly his best game of his career, because he had some good games last year, but I mean, this was definitely his most consistent, largest workload. So I think that he definitely is back mentally. Like, I noticed at one point he got up and did the Zeke eat first down signal, you know, and for a pretty humble guy like himself, I think that that's a pretty nice sign of where his head's at.
Yeah, and he was also effective as a receiver too, showed off some elusiveness in the open field. He had that one simple dump off from Sam where he was able to sort of juke out one defender, shake out of the tackle of another one, and pick up something like 20 yards or so on just a quick little sort of outlet safety valve sort of pass from Sam. And I think I heard that this was actually the first game that he'd played this season without a knee brace on, and that maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe that mobility that he got back helped him out, but he definitely looked a lot more whole and was showing a lot, like I said, more elusiveness, just running more fluid, I thought, and getting big payoff for his time, really.
Mm-hmm. And I think he did a much better job with actually like getting upfield, being decisive. Maybe a small factor is gelling more with this offensive line, you know, because whenever you have two new guards and you run a lot of inside zone, it might take a little bit of time to mesh with them. And I don't know if that played into it, but he seems to have figured out where the holes are going to be and is hitting them much harder. So I watched a lot of that Wisconsin-Michigan game. And the things that I'm going to be looking for from Keyonte Ingram for the rest of this year is, first off, just keeping consistent, not having any more bad games like he did against LSU. But second, to take that next step and get to that level that, you know, Jonathan Taylor showed last week before he got injured and Travis Etienne shows, is I'm hoping he can be a little bit better at the second level. Because like, there was a play really early on where he ran into Braun at the second level. Like, I'm talking about once you get to the linebackers and the safeties, right, past the line of scrimmage. Like, you don't want to be running into your offensive linemen down there. There's a lot of space. You know, so it's a matter of just developing a little bit more patience once he gets past there and then hitting some cuts. And that's when we can see the next evolution of this run offense, where we go from having all of our runs be between 3 and 12 yards to maybe popping a couple, like, long runs.
Yeah, it would be nice to see him get one of those sort of big breakaway runs. It feels like it's been a long time since we had a good long run. I know he had, like, the 27-yarder or something last week against Rice. But really one of those ones where we're on the other side of the 50 and he just breaks through and is just takes off and goes and finishes the run in the end zone.
Mm-hmm. Or even a run where he gets chased down, you know, because he doesn't have the fastest thing. So I'll never be upset with a guy for not being able to run faster than he is. But he doesn't really get chased down very much because he doesn't get past that second level. But anyways, that's just kind of the next step for him, and something I'm hoping to see as the year goes on.
Definitely. The another guy that I think at this point it's going to be sort of a broken record, and really the only reason his name didn't come up last week is because we didn't need it to come up last week against Rice. Devin Duvernay, yet again, being the workhorse, just continuing to secure his place is sort of when Sam needs yards, he looks for six. If it's third down, we're probably going to Duvernay. And that, I'm sure that package will evolve as teams sort of key in on that, but there's only so much you can do when the guy's lining up in the slot and you can't really jam him as effectively as you can for an outside receiver. But Devin Duvernay, something like 12 catches, had a touchdown, showed that he's not just a sort of slot catch and dash guy with that nice toe tap touchdown to open our scoring. I mean, he's just doing everything right. He continues to be sort of one of those program guys, showing just a ton of fight, willing to do whatever it takes to help the team.
Yeah, it's pretty telling that he had 12 of our 20 receptions. I mean, nobody else had more than two for the game. So I think part of that was the matchup. Oklahoma State seemed like really content to just let Duvernay have whatever and take away everything else. So I don't know why they did that, but
definitely an interesting choice on their side. Yeah. One of many interesting choices that their coaching staff made on Saturday.
Yep. And but I mean, hey, he converted, still hasn't dropped a pass. Sam is finding him. They have good chemistry on third down, so that's at least one thing we can build on in that respect. But, yeah, the guy's having a great year.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, I know some Texas fans have gone so far as to proclaim him first round, but I think he's, as long as he continues to do this, doesn't get hurt, he's playing his way into quite a bit of money, going from what I probably would have been surprised to see him go before about the sixth or seventh round coming into this year, just because he's going to put up some ridiculous 40 time that would shoot him up the boards a little bit. But just the production, the toughness that he shows, the hands that he's showing, the ability to run his routes, and the experience inside and outside, I think he's working his way up definitely into being sort of that day two draft pick area. So he's making himself some money, and he's going to get paid, and he's going to deserve every bit of it for the work he's put in his time here at Texas. As someone else...
Well, one thing with the draft is it's kind of funny to think about, but I mean, Duvernay, he's probably expected to have the best combine of any player that's come out under Herman so far, right? Like, the only guy that I can really think of that actually helped himself with a combine was probably Gary Johnson, but I mean, even he went undrafted. So yeah, he's slowly working his way up the draft boards.
Definitely. We did have, finally, sort of a, I guess, wildly successful trick play. We've run a few trick plays this year. They haven't really done much more than pick up a first down or so. But this one, we got real creative, lots of moving the ball around, and it resulted in a touchdown, so that's good. And, shockingly, got our tight ends involved in the receiving game. But we had a double reverse flea flicker touchdown, so Sam handed it off to Keontae handed it off to Jake Smith pitched it back to Sam, and Sam, through all this commotion, saw Cade Brewer, who had snuck out, sold the block, wide open, easy dump off pass, walk-in touchdown. Pretty sure everyone could have scored as long as you had functioning limbs. So it was a really good design, really complicated design, but one that we executed perfectly, I thought. But I think it was really just nice to get Cade Brewer involved, because we have not seen a whole lot to write home about from any of our tight ends so far.
I kind of hinted earlier that I was going to bring up some of that building plays off of themselves, you know. And this is kind of what I was referring to, because I bet that this has been in the playbook for like at least a year. Or like putting stuff on tape. I think you mentioned like holding off until OU, you know. But that Philly special play where Sam gets the ball back, like that's hardly even a trick play anymore. That's like something we do pretty consistently around the 30 to 40 yard line.
Hell, it's so common at this point that even Pitt knows how to run it.
Yeah. And I mean, we aren't the first, we won't be the last for that. But this was the first time earlier in the game we actually ran the reverse. Like Jake Smith got it. So instead of Lil Jordan or Duvernay throwing to Sam, Jake actually just ran the reverse. And then this time, as soon as Jake Smith gets the ball, you can see their entire defense immediately like look to their left like, oh my god, where's Sam? And they all just take off sprinting that way. And then Sam's right there and he just throws the ball over them because they're all confused trying to adjust, you know. So I bet they've been sitting on that one for a while, just waiting to bust it out at the right time, and it worked perfectly this time.
Yeah, definitely a lot of fun to watch all those trick plays when they come up. And I'm interested to see, like you said, just sort of how you're putting things on film to build off of them in the future. I'm interested to see what other wrinkles come in and where those trick plays come in, what plays they're sort of built off of. So next one, again, feels like we're going to be a broken record on this. The offensive line was dominant. That's nothing new for us, especially with how they played against LSU. I feel like it's not unfair to expect them to be dominant in every single game from here on out, because no one's going to be anywhere close to the defensive line talent that LSU had. But our defensive line also showed out really well. Didn't end up with any sacks because of Spencer Sanders' mobility, but had a huge impact in the run game. Yeah, sure, Chuba Hubbard got his 100 yards, but it took him nearly 40 snaps to do it. I mean, he averaged less than 3.5 yards per carry. And this is a guy who came into the game averaging something ridiculous, like 7 yards per carry or something like that. So all those guys on the front, especially Coburn, Roach, even Taquan Graham, all of them had a huge impact. We're constantly just launching Oklahoma State blockers backwards on every run snap. Yeah. And really just being disruptive in that aspect of Oklahoma State's game.
I mean, Roach like threw two guys into Chuba Hubbard on that 1/4 down. Like, the dude is actually really good against the run. No sacks, but, I mean, Coburn did get there and get the hit on the second interception by Sanders. So that counts for something. But I don't know that our line will ever be great at generating pressure, which, I mean, that's hard to do anyways with only three guys. But, no, our defensive line might have... I mean, they might have had the best game, like, the best game in terms of, like, a unit playing well, if that makes sense. So I was really impressed. And this comes 2 weeks after I said in my write-up on Longhorn Nation that Taquan Graham might be the next Bregan Hager. He's been proving me wrong. Two straight games, I think you could say, where his best game is a Longhorn. And I think that kind of was the foundation of what I thought was just a really good all-around defensive performance.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before. This team responds well to negging. You talk shit about somebody, it seems like they just, like, and not just you, I mean, anyone. You start sort of targeting any one player as not playing particularly well. And it seems like this team sort of just hears it somehow and is off to the races. Like, I thought Kobe Boyce looked a lot better in this game than he did even in the first couple weeks. He wasn't out there really until about the fourth quarter, third quarter, when the injuries kind of dragged him back onto the field. But I thought he did a lot better because he did get matched up with Tylan Wallace. And I was concerned that that was going to lead to us watching a replay of the first half from last season. against Oklahoma State, where Kobe Boyce got eaten alive by Tylan Wallace. That didn't come to fruition either. I thought he played a lot better than sort of what we've come to expect from him this season.
Yeah, the cornerbacks as a whole played a lot better. I mean, Jalen Green had a really good game. He bounced back really well after LSU. It sucks that he's out 4 weeks, right?
At least four weeks is what
No, that's bad because he played really well. They all were aggressive. I was defensive backs like all over the place. They were just thumping. They were back looking like their old selves. So yeah, definitely a big bounce back game. The thing that stands out to me is we allow 30 points, right, as a defense, and I don't think they're getting enough credit because Oklahoma State hit that 30 point mark, and that's usually where you can say the defense must have messed something up. But if you look at the number of drives, Oklahoma State had 14 drives and we only had 11. Like, that's the main reason the game was close, and yeah, that's a function of the two lost punts, right? But the first half, Oklahoma State had three more drives than we did because they got the ball, and then they had the last drive, and then they also got the fumble drive after that. So they had three more drives in the first half than we did. Still ahead, only allowed 20. We only gave up a little bit over 2 points per possession. 14 of their 30 points came off of having really great field position on the muff punts. So just, I thought it was a tremendous effort by the defense all around. We gave up a couple of deep shots. Spencer Sanders made guys look silly a couple times. But, you know, if we got that level of performance from the defense every game this season, I think I would take that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler, they started off kind of sounding like they were being a bit sarcastic with it. But the more they got into the game, it sounded like the more they actually were starting to realize that it's true. Where in the Big 12, you don't have this sort of just you're looking at your raw yardage to decide how good your defense played. It's all about your performance in the red zone, keeping guys from scoring touchdowns, holding them to field goals, that sort of thing. But you're absolutely right. You take away those two muffed punts, the defense, that takes 14 points right off the board for Oklahoma State. All else being equal, the defense only giving up 16 points to an offense with Tylan Wallace and Chuba Hubbard that's as good as you can ask for against a defense an offense that's as good as the one that Oklahoma State is running this year.
Yeah, and then last point for me on the defense, I am absolutely chalking this one up to Orlando. He's now 2-1 against Gundy in my mind, you know. In the preview with Tux, I was talking about how, the first year, 2017, he had Gundy's number. Then last year, Gundy kind of had his number. But this year, the game plan was great. They doubled Wallace all game. He still got loose for a couple. But the game plan basically was just attack the edges hard, attack off tackle, that C gap. Because Oklahoma State runs so much outside zone. And so we just took away their staple play. That's why Hubbard's yardage was so bad, because we took away the thing they did best just by being really aggressive with those defensive end and cornerback spots. So really big shout out to Orlando. I was a little bit worried that he would get out schemed in this one, but he absolutely didn't.
Yeah, and especially in the second half, that first quarter, it seemed like Tylan Wallace and Chuba Hubbard were finding some space, made adjustments, not even just at halftime, but even going into the second quarter there. And really slowed both of those guys down. But yeah, I thought this was a really good job. Really, really strong showing for Todd Orlando's defense. But real quick, we just want to take a minute to let y'all know this episode is sponsored by Last Stand Hats, the number one place for real Texas fans to get their game day gear. As the name implies, they've got a ton of great hats with some really creative designs. So if you want something other than just sort of your standard block tee or the Longhorn logo, as well as some shirts if ball caps aren't really your style, this is really your go-to place, Last Stand Hats. They've got some pretty cool designs on the website. They've got one for DBU, which might be a little bit up for debate after that LSU game. But
yeah,
you know,
buy that one next year.
Yeah, save that one for next year. Put that in the cart. Just remember it. Come back to it. In the meantime, they got a pretty cool Script Texas cap. They got one that just says sort of the 40 acres that looks pretty good. My personal favorite, they've got one that's just the burnt orange state of Texas and right on the spot where Austin would be, rather than like Tom Herman had that one last year that had the state of Texas and then the star on Austin. This one right across where Austin would be says fight. So Texas fight. That one looks really good. I'm waiting for mine to actually show up. I did order that before this, so I wouldn't feel like a liar trying to say that trying to sell you on something that I've never purchased. So that's a really awesome design. They have that one not only on the hat, but also on a t-shirt. So Yeah, definitely check out Last Stand Hats to help you guys save a little money as well. If you head to laststandhats.com and use the code HORNSCAST10, you'll save 10% on your entire purchase. So make sure you wear your heart on your head and go to laststandhats.com. That's an ad read. That's the first ad read I've ever done. I don't want to brag too much, but I thought that went pretty well. What do you think?
I mean, I can hear everybody ordering from laststandhats.com using the code HORNSCAST10, you know, as we speak. So, yeah, I think it went pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure I heard you type in there in the background just already. I could hear you ordering a hat and
yeah,
a shirt.
Yeah, you can hear the HORNSCAST10 at laststandhats.com.
Yeah, I mean, you got one of those loud mechanical keyboards, I'm sure. So, but with that, let's get into the hot take reviews. And Tux had a hot take last week while he was hosting in my stead. And
so
Tux,
great.
I think, is now the proud owner of by far the most off-base hot take yet this season for us. He was saying Iowa State was going to go through a scare against UL Monroe. I think the only scare that anyone had during that game was UL Monroe was scared that Iowa State might hang 100 on him.
Yeah, and you know, he also picked Oklahoma State to win. So, not looking too hot this season, but we'll have him back for the OU game maybe so he can pick OU and keep it going.
Yeah, maybe that's something we should do every week. We should just sort of feature him for every preview. He doesn't have to take time out to necessarily be here for the whole podcast, but just have him pre-record, here's my prediction. We'll cut to him like Bear on College game day, and that might be a bit of an insult depending on your opinion of Bear, whatever his name is. But yeah, I mean, if he's gonna get all his predictions wrong, let's have him predict every week.
Yeah, and let's keep kicking him while he's down and he isn't here to defend himself.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, sweet, he's not gonna be here, we're just gonna talk shit about his picks and his just sort of general ability to understand the game. He's not here to defend himself. What's he gonna do?
Nope.
Please don't cut that part out, Tux.
Yeah. But yeah, my hot take was still wrong, but a little bit better. I thought Duvernay and Smith would both go for 100 yards. Jake Smith. I think Jake Smith had like 24 receiving and a touchdown. And I think he had the reverse for like 7 yards. So he hit 30. Duvernay hit 100. But yeah, do you mind if I just launch into my fire, who I want to fire from here? Because it transitions well.
Yeah, you can go ahead.
It's a little bit of a rant. Okay. Okay, so I'm firing Drew Maringer and Corby Meekins because my hot take should have been right because nobody will convince me that I'm wrong. Well, maybe somebody will, but I don't think anybody will. But I think that for this game, they should have slid Brennan Eagles to the X, put Devin Duvernay back at Z, and run Jake Smith from the slot. You know, those are your three big play guys this year. You're getting all three of them on the field at the same time. Malcolm Epps is not a well-rounded enough player to be playing starting snaps, in my opinion. He looked good against Rice, hasn't really shown the ability to play up to any level of competition above Rice. And yeah, I think it just makes way too much sense to get your best three receivers on the field at the same time. Like, I get that Herman is inflexible with his 11 personnel, wanting to keep a tight end on the field, not wanting to take off Jake Smith for that, so I can understand that. But whenever you don't have Colin Johnson, I don't get keeping Epps on the field instead of Smith, because then that's what you're debating. You're not debating Brewer and 11 versus Smith. You're debating Epps and Smith, you know. And Duvernay played all of last year at Z. Epps repped all last year at X. Like, they know the system. They could have done it. I don't get why they didn't. And yeah, fire both of those receiver coaches, because I think that it just makes too much sense to do that.
Yeah. And I think I was listening to one of our fellow podcasts on HornsCast here. I think there was a similar sentiment echoed by the BC Unplugged guys, kind of making a desperate cry, hoping someone on the football staff is listening when they say that you can go four wide. You can get Devin Duvernay and Jake Smith and Brennan Eagles all out there at the same time. And if you absolutely insist on Malcolm Epps being out there, like you said, picking between Epps and Cade Brewer makes a lot more sense than picking between Jake Smith and Cade Brewer. So roll it back to the hot take. So we started something new this week, sort of got a community hot take. We've done this in the past where we dedicate an entire episode to community hot takes, but wanted to get you guys more involved. So we actually set up a phone line through Google this past week that you guys can call into, or you can text or whatever, and leave a hot take for us. And if you leave a voicemail, if you're one of those people who doesn't want to call on the phone because you're worried someone's going to pick up, trust me, I don't like talking to people on the phone either. I'm not answering. I have that thing set to immediately go to voicemail. So if you want to call in and leave an animated voice message talking about your hot take, you're welcome to do that. If you want to do like we got so far this week, if you want to just text in a hot take, every week we'll pick one or two. During the bye weeks, we might pick a few more, but pick one or two. We'll talk about the hot take and sort of break down our thoughts about it. But that number for the Fire Tom Herman podcast hot take line, that phone number is going to be 512-655-9038. So yeah, give us a call, leave us a voicemail, shoot us a text message with your hot take, and we might feature it on here. So this week, I don't know who it was. It didn't say who it was, but someone from the Houston area, it seems like, had this for their hot take. Kirk Herbstreit is not some anti-Texas boogeyman. His comments during the OSU game were just as pro-Texas as they were pro-OSU. The only thing I didn't appreciate was how fast he and the other commentator, Chris Fowler, were to point out Malcolm Roach faking an injury. Where was that against LSU?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's a fine take. I don't think Herbstreit is all that bad. The cesspool thing, I mean, I didn't like it, but, I mean, he was at College Station for game day playing to his audience. I'm still going to always hold it against him, and I'll never separate that from him. But, I mean, he's not so bad, especially as, like, a commentator in game. I mean, he's definitely not as bad as a lot of the guys we could have ended up with. He's not, like, on Tony Romo's level, but he's not terrible.
Yeah. I mean, I like Herbie for a guy who went to Ohio State and you would think would sort of fall into that fan base. I feel like he does a pretty good job staying impartial, even coming from a blue blood school. I really don't hold anything against him for the cesspool comment because, I mean, I'll still argue that he had a point to the sort of situation, the toxicity that we had around the program and to Mac Brown's career and up until basically Tom Herman came in. So I can't fully blame him for that. Like you said, in College Station, so there's going to be that added bit where he's playing with the crowd, trying to get a reaction. But yeah, I didn't think that the commentators were slanted at all. I saw a lot of people online complaining about that, like they were doing something specifically OSU focused. I never got that impression at all. But yeah, that for whatever reason, that Kirk Herbstreit hate is a pretty hot topic among Texas fans. As far as the bit about the LSU faking injuries thing, as I recall from rewatching that game, they did mention that a couple of them were a little bit suspect. And naturally, as a result of that, they're going to be quick to look for a Texas player when the sort of favor is repaid down the line. I wasn't that upset about it. I kind of laughed when they brought it up, that Malcolm Roach kind of just took a seat on the field.
Yeah, I will say the thing that I really don't like about this commentator, and it's more about Fowler, is he always says Duvernay, like instead of like Duvernay, just like normally. He always puts the emphasis on the A, and it just really...
Puts the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Yeah, I don't know. It just really kind of grinds my gears, but that's kind of it.
Yeah, it's not... And I don't think Chris Fowler has the same sort of emotional range to his call like a Gus Johnson, where Gus Johnson will lose his mind, feel like he's going crazy in the booth. Chris Fowler just doesn't feel like that's all there. So yeah, about the most excitement it feels like he gets is when Dev Dove catches a pass and you hear the Duvernay sort of this sort of run up into the end of the last name. I'm not big on Chris Fowler as a play-by-play guy either, so I can't say I disagree with you there.
Nope. Well, fire him. And who are you going to fire? The coaching staff or?
Well, for this one, we're going back to those of you who have listened for a long time. You already know where this is going. He's sort of been whatever the opposite is of the white whale from Moby Dick, the one that got away. This is sort of the one that is constantly there and won't go away. And of course, I'm talking about Derek Wareheim, someone who I have openly requested get a one-way ticket to the sun. He needs to go. For the life of me, I cannot come up with a single positive thing to say about Derek Wareheim. He's not recognizable on the field. He's not one of the assistant coaches who's like pops up on TV when they show a sideline shot and they go, hey, there's that assistant coach. He's a net negative, I think, in the recruiting sphere. As Walker Little's bathroom will attest to. We saw the problems we had with the offensive line when he was the O-line coach in year one with Tom Herman. The tight ends have been his responsibility year two and year three. We have seen no progress out of Cade Brewer or Reese Letao. If anything, Cade Brewer has regressed since he came under Wareheim's tutelage. And now this season, because we wanted Craig Nivar to be the co-defensive coordinator to assist Todd Orlando, he is now in charge of special teams as well. And what do you know? We have absolute chaos on our special teams this time around. We have Chris Adimora, who has never taken a rep on special teams, admittedly, because of the injuries. He was on the field for that onside kick recovery. But we look completely disorganized on that. And honestly, with how the ball just bounced to Chris Adimora, super lucky that we recovered that and we're not talking about how we blew another last-second lead to Oklahoma State. And then, obviously, the punt fielding. Jake Smith, okay, he's a freshman. One of those is going to happen. He went to fair catch it. He was in position. He had his hands in the right spot. The ball just slipped through. That happens occasionally. I'm not going to hang that one on the coach. But the fact that we don't know how to clear when we're killing the punt, when Brandon Jones, a senior, is out there killing the punt, and the gunners and the blockers are still running towards where the ball is landing. And then to the point that we have Brandon Jones, who has proven that he is a reliable punt-safe guy, where he knows to take the fair catch, not to try and do too much. He's sliding in like a baseball player sliding into second base, trying to field a ball in the air off of a punt and muffing our second punt of the game is just completely inexcusable. That sort of like monumental amounts of mental regression on something that's been super reliable up to this point, it just baffles me. I don't know at what point is this many problems with Derek Wareheim's coaching. At what point does this finally kick in and we go, he needs to go? I'm hoping that these one-year contracts are where that line is drawn, but he was on a two-year contract before. We could have cut him last season and we didn't do it then. Now we have the special teams falling apart because they're under his tutelage. He needs to go. He needs to be gone. He should have been gone after year one, and here we are at year three, and he's still hanging around. So,
well, not to belabor the point, but I think that the thing you haven't even mentioned is that it wasn't just Adimora on the hands team, you know, because like he's a safety, like sure he's a skill position player, but the guy that actually initially whiffed on that onside kick was a walk-on linebacker that for some reason was on the hands team. Adam Moore wasn't even on the side of the field that the ball was kicked to. He came from the middle of the field to recover this. So that's a great play by him. But the guy that got the original shot at the ball was a walk-on linebacker. And it went right through his hands, and Oklahoma State had two guys with a chance before Adam Moore came in and scooped it up. So definitely got a little bit lucky there. So yeah.
Like you said, doesn't go against the point. Really just really enhances it.
Oh,
really.
Yeah. No, I'm just adding a little twig to your flame over there.
Yeah, just one more thing. One more list. One more item on the bitch list for Derek Wareheim. Today, for this episode, the which coach to fire is a lot less of a sort of tongue-in-cheek joke and more of a very serious topic for me. So, yeah, fire Derek Wareheim is the conclusion, really, of this podcast.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for listening to today's episode. Texas is on bye this week, so we're not going to do a preview episode for you later this week. But we are planning to do sort of a review episode next week. Same time next week, and we'll discuss more of the sort of national storylines, the Big 12 conference storylines, as well as try and field some questions from you guys. Hopefully we'll get some stuff on the hotline. So if you want to ask us a question, you can call or text the podcast on our hot take line at 512-655-9038, or you can tweet at us at the FTH podcast. Or you can track us down on Reddit, on our Longhorn Nation. Try and slide into our Reddit DMs the way you do. Hit us with those thoughts and questions and hot takes. Like I said, we want to be able to do this every week, so keep throwing hot takes at us. We'll keep reviewing them. Yours might pop up on the show. But anyway, enjoy the bye week. Try to use this time to repair the relationships you've sort of ignored and left by the wayside as you've watched college football every Saturday. Try and do something nice for your significant other since you don't have Texas football to distract you. Or do what I'll probably do and just sit and watch a ton of college football even though your team's not playing. So that's tons of fun too. But we'll see you all next week. Hook 'em.